Multi-Platform DevOps with Jérôme Laban.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host. And make sure to check out www.azuredevops.show for past episodes and show notes. And the goal of this podcast is to empower you and your teams with the information that you need to move fast, deliver consistent quality using the .NET ecosystem, and run your software systems with confidence in Azure. And for those of you running .NET and Azure-based user groups, I've been doing a lot of those online video presentations with groups all over the country. If you run one of those groups, I'd love to get on your schedule. And also, our sponsor and my employer, ClearMeasure, is a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And so if we can help, please get in touch. And if you're a .NET developer and would like a path to become an architect, we are hiring. Just apply on the website, clearmeasure.com, and several positions are still open at the time of this recording. Well, I'm really excited for our guest today on the show. I have with me Jérôme Laban, and he is the CTO of the Uno platform, open source platform. And he's also a four-time recipient of the Microsoft MVP award. So Jérôme, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you, Jeffrey, for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Now, for those not following the Uno platform, might not be as familiar with your work, as we ask all of our guests, what's your background and how did you, what things led up to being the CTO of the Uno platform for you?
Sure. So, the Uno platform is all about, you know, XAML and C Sharp. So it's all about making cross-platform UI. And, I've been doing this for the past 7 years or so. So it's been a while. One thing led to another. And my background is doing lots of C Sharp and .NET since the very beginning of it. So we're talking 2001. So I've been bathing into this for quite a while. And, you know, doing DevOps and other things. It wasn't called DevOps at that time. Or talking CI and all that kind of things with the Team Foundation server at the time. So I've been in there for quite a while. And been developing the Uno platform. So it's an open source project that that's completely free for anyone to use. And I've been developing that and, you know, pretty much doing the jack of all trades for maintaining that project, including CI, DevOps, and product management stuff that goes around with this. So it started off, Team Foundation server, and then moved over to, what was that called? Visual Studio Online Services, then over to Azure DevOps. So it's been quite an interesting journey to get there. That's that. So I'm pretty much geeking around, C Sharp and diving into developing into .NET runtime directly and WebAssembly recently and Linux and, melting everything down to, doing an amazing product that runs on many platforms.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, before we get into, the ins and outs of the Uno platform and the things that you've done with DevOps around there, if just by familiarization, if people are looking at cross-platform or mobile development and looking to the Uno platform, what kinds of things should they be looking for it now versus what kind of things should be looking for it maybe coming soon in the future?
It's a very fast moving world, and in many respects. So Uno platform basically supports, it's not just mobile, it's pretty much anything. So we're talking iOS, Android, macOS, Windows, Windows desktop. So there are two flavors of that. There's WebAssembly, there's Tizen, there's Linux, there's many many platforms at once. So that means that with regards to, you know, supporting all those platforms, each individual platform has its own quirks and, you know, things to know, whether it being from developing for the specific platform, or contributing for Uno to the specific platform. So there's a two axes for that one. Most of the time, the promise of the Uno platform is to say that you developing once using XAML and C#, you're pretty close to what WPF and UWP are doing. So we're close to the UWP XAML. So that's the language that we chose, the version of the dialect that we chose. But after that, there are always things that need to go down to the specifics of the platform. So if you're on Android, you need to know about packaging your application properly and running it in specific context. If you're on iOS, you have to run on Macs. If you're driving for the web, then you may want to run that on Linux, because on Linux, there are specifics that may be interesting. If you're going for Tizen, then there are specifics for other things. And then if you're on Linux, maybe you want to package your apps using AppImage or using other types of packages, package management systems that exist over there. So lots of things that need to be looked at. And for us, the two parts that are driving adoption a lot are the Linux platform. You know, lots of people are interested in this. Then goes for WebAssembly, and then iOS, Android, macOS. Those three targets are the ones that are pulling resources quite a bit on our end. And with regards to what people should know about, the platform that moves the most is WebAssembly, definitely. So WebAssembly is all about getting an application running in your browser without having to install anything. So it's pretty close to PWAs and SPA applications that you could do when you're developing an application using, I don't know, Vue or anything like that. But for WebAssembly, it's all about building a C++, C# or anything like that that can run directly in the browser. So the biggest known project for that in the .NET space is Blazor. And Blazor is taking a foundation onto .NET 5, and so are we. We're using .NET 5 and contributing to .NET to make that run on the browsers. So that space is moving quickly, and for now, the specifics of building a WebAssembly application that goes fast needs to run on Linux. But is this going to change during the year, where Windows support is going to be added as well for building on the server side? So that's the kind of things that need to be looked at for WebAssembly. But the other platforms also have lots of specifics that need to be looked at. Linux as well. So that's about that.
right. So there's a lot of developers out there who they might not be building a piece of software that's a platform like Uno is, but just having the challenge of building and testing, validating,
yes,
and packaging for multiple platforms is a problem space that a lot of development teams have, especially if they've gone from just running software on their own servers to mobile apps that are distributed in the app store, or having some software that's shipped and installed on the client computer. So you've designed and have a pretty successful DevOps environment for the platform. Can you walk us through how the thought process that you went through to go about and the specific challenges? Because there's a lot, I'm sure you don't get right out of the box.
Oh, no.
Build and deploy.
You don't get that.
Design yourself.
Exactly. You don't get that. The story is interesting because, I've always been, we're talking 7 years, 10 years ago, something like, Xamarin was just out at the time, and they didn't support any kind of CI systems, because if you want to build on Mac, build an iOS for iOS, you have to have weird things running there. And then it was running on the XAML build servers, XAML based build servers Visual. No, it was not Visual Studio Team Services. It was Team Foundation Server 2015 or something. And all those were very complicated pieces of, you know, if you wanted to run something that runs on a Mac, then you have to have things. So I had to poke around and, you know, manipulate many things to get that running, including hacking around the add-ins of Visual Studio so that it could run on the server. So that's the kind of things that I had to do at the time to get there running. But you know, things moved along, and then, you know, the Xamarin teams and Microsoft folks, you know, just got that, you know, running a lot better, and then it got easier and easier to get running to the point where now we're running on Azure, and you have now when you're using the UNO platform and building for iOS, Android, and other platforms like that, you can use macOS hosted agents that work pretty well. Considering that you have to fix the versions, you know, because that's the hosted agent story, and that's one of the biggest pain points at this point about the hosted agents for Windows specifically, and macOS and macOS for that matter, because you have to follow their update cycle. So you have to fix the versions that you're using. So if you want to use macOS, you want to use Xcode, a specific version, you have to run something at the beginning that says, I want to use that version and nothing else. So otherwise your build would get broken. That's not possible for Windows, unfortunately, at this point. So especially for UWP, if you want to make an application for Windows, you just have to follow. And that's why I wish that Windows was following the Docker route more heavily in some ways. Something that we're doing on Linux. So building for Linux is a bliss in many ways, because you just take your Docker and that's it. It just works. You know, you freeze your environment and then everything goes along and it works. So that's the kind of things that we're battling against. So that's for the client side when you're building an application. And for UNO itself, when we're talking about building UNO, we're talking about now we're at a pipeline that starts about, I think it's 35 jobs in parallel. So that's it's getting quite big. So we're building and testing so unit testing and UI testing UNO on itself using macOS hosted agents that run iOS and Android simulators, and we're also using Selenium and browsers to test for WebAssembly as well. And also building for all sorts of different environments, like building for different versions of Visual Studio and different versions of macOS and Android, and testing and UI testing for all those platforms at once. Same thing goes for Linux, you know, testing for all those versions. And now we also have to test between versions of C#. So you have C# 8 and C# 9. So we're testing all those versions. That's why we have so many jobs in our pipeline to test all of this.
Now you said 35. Does that mean you have 35 platform combinations?
No. It's not 35 platform combinations. It's mostly so we have steps for building the NuGet packages. Then we have steps for UI testing, and UI testing can be in parallel and with different versions and retries and things like that. So it's not combinations. The combinations of platforms are going to be multiple Androids, multiple iOSs, and then Linux and Tizen and others that we're testing that way. But mostly it's all about parallelizing so that the build doesn't take, I think if we put every build time, end to end, it's going to be something like 6 hours or something. So parallelizing is very important.
Well, let's get an understanding of kind of the design you settled on. It started at the very beginning, where a developer is making a small change. What kind of branching strategy did you put in place at the front end?
So we're using the trunk-based development. So and feature branches, if that makes sense. So R master is something that's always latest. It's pretty much the develop in the GitHub flow, developers are going to be picking up that branch to do their current work. What's going to happen when they're making a PR? We're basically running all the tests that we can, including UI tests. So that's why at every change, we want to validate as much as we can. For now, we still have the luxury of being able to run everything in a PR because it doesn't take too long. But at some point, we're going to have to do things like the one that GitHub has been doing, which is some kind of a gating, I think I remember correctly. So what they do is they let developer check in with minimal testing or sufficient testing. And then if the actual larger suite gets failing, then they get threatened to have their PR rolled back. That kind of things that happen. So we're probably going to end up being at that point.
So you've enabled automated builds upon pull request creation.
Yes.
Okay.
So
how many tests are you able to fit into that, and what duration does that pull request build take on the feature branch?
So it takes around. That's the thing. So it fluctuates because of the types of testing we're doing. Most of the tests can be run without being retried, which is around an hour or something. So it still takes a while. Okay. And then there are some tests that need to be run multiple times, and that we have strategies of auto retrying, auto retrying builds based on the types of failure. And we're not retrying the whole thing. We're just retrying parts of the build. So if UI tests do fail, we basically go and poke the API for Visual Studio, for Azure DevOps to rerun failed jobs. So that's pretty much what we're doing. And so the duration of the build just goes, from the full thing to just a few tests that may fail, so that we don't spend too many time. So it may end up being, let's say, 2 hours, at the end. If something fails really badly, it's going to take 2 hours to know that your build is actually incorrect. Something like that.
Now, I'm sure everybody has these. If you notice something like a spelling error, and someone says, "Hey, go fix this spelling error," do you have a short cycle build for that?
No, unfortunately. So I wish it would be possible, and that's something that we've been looking at, and it's actually a limitation of Azure DevOps and GitHub. So you can have a link between the two, if you're in full Azure DevOps, it's easy to do. You just pull excludes on builds for documentation and things like that. So that's pretty easy to do. But on our end, the problem is that we're using required checks on GitHub, and the problem is that if on Azure DevOps you use excludes for specific parts of the paths that have been modified, then required checks don't work on GitHub. So basically, your PR cannot go through. So for now, considering that limitation, even for a single typo, we have to rerun everything.
Okay. And your code is on GitHub, and all of your build and deploy and package is on Azure Pipelines.
Exactly. So we have a link between the two.
Okay. So the pull request is accepted now, merges into master. What happens next in your environment?
What we're doing afterwards is, so for Uno itself, there's quite a few things that need to run afterwards, but it's mostly deployment. So we're deploying onto an Azure DevOps specific NuGet feed, so that developers can go and get that pretty quickly and can go back and we have approvals that make sure that we're not publishing NuGet packages that don't need to be there. But we also push to get to NuGet the development packages. So any developer that wants to test out something new can go on GitHub on NuGet and get the latest packages. So we're tagging those packages using a dash dev something with a number afterwards. So we're using Git version for versioning. This is a tool that's integrated into, well, that has add-ins on Azure DevOps that works pretty well for us at this point. Maybe we'll change that at some point, but it works quite okay.
And what's the name of the tool again?
Git version.
Okay.
Yeah, Git version. Quite
a lot of people useful. Be interested in that.
Yeah. And so what basically it is doing is using branch names and commit count and tags to determine what version you're on, basically, and on what branch. And that's one of the interests. So basically, if you're committing and you're making a pull request on master, it's going to automatically name it and version it using the next version to be published based on the tags that have been detected previously in the current branch. So that ends up being the deployment on NuGet. And then once we want to make a release, basically tag a base version on master And then we branch off and make iterative pull requests on that branch. So let's say we released UNO 3.4 recently. So basically made a tag on master for the base commit that we said is UNO 3.4.0. And then we iterate on that one if there are hot fixes to make. So we're basically making backporting hot fixes using a tool that's called Mergify on GitHub. So we have a set of commands that say Mergify backport in a PR, and then it just takes a commit in a merge PR engine and backports it to another branch so that we can make hot fixes to a specific version of UNO. So that's the kind of things that we're looking at.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
Let me back us up a little bit, because if you're pushing those out to NuGet after the pull request, do you fully deploy to target platforms on the pull request build process?
So we're talking about UNO at this point. So UNO itself doesn't deploy on anything. It just produces packages, pretty much. It produces NuGet packages. So that's the UNO build process itself. So now if we want to talk to about creating an application that does that, that's where we have a good example. Microsoft has been open sourcing the UNO calculator, the Windows calculator, a while back. So it's a C++ application, the very one that you're using if you're using Windows. And what we did is we took that source code and ported it over to UNO so that we can make it run on iOS, Android, web, Linux, and
that's
others.
Online,
so
right? Anybody can just go to it?
It is online. URL? Yeah, if you go calculator.platform.uno. And same thing if you go to UNO calculator on your iOS, Android, or your iPad device, it's going to be available there.
Yeah, for people getting into WebAssembly, I found that really interesting just to see how the browser behaves on a pretty complex WebAssembly URL launched application versus, you know, the spy applications, which are really JavaScript.
Exactly. So that application is interesting because we didn't touch the code that much. It's pretty much porting straight line by line what the application was doing originally. And there are quite a few things that may need to be adjusted in that application. And it serves us as a base for many things, especially with regards to the discussions we are having with the .NET team, so that the performance improves and the size improves and, you know, many aspects of what WebAssembly is doing. So that's why the application at this point is about 40 megabytes uncompressed. This is pretty big for a web application in some sense, but it's something that, you know, we wanted to make sure that the .NET community knows about and said, you know, if you have an application that's, you know, significantly bigger than just showing Hello World, and that calculator seems small, but it's actually not that right. Small. It's translated in many languages. It does. It's accessible. It has many converters and things like that. So it's pretty, you know, you can resize it pretty heavily. You know, it's supporting many screen sizes and things like that.
Full scientific calculator too.
Exactly. So it's a non-trivial piece of code, and so that's why it's that big in some sense. But we wanted to have that application as a showcase of something that can be done, and that's why you ported it over to the other platforms. And interestingly, that's one of the not so many calculators on iPad that can run docked on the side, because if an iPad Apple doesn't provide a calculator for the iPad, surprisingly.
Wow!
But our calculator actually does work properly on an iPad docked. So you can try it out there.
So you received this code base from the Windows team. Did you receive the test cases for the calculator as well? And did those port over?
Yes, they're there, and it's something that we haven't ported yet. But because they're not using the same UI testing framework that we're using, but we're looking at making sure that we're providing the same API so that it can run as well.
Okay.
So it's an open source project. The yeah. The original Windows calculator is open source, so the tests are there as well. And we have for this year, we're going to take a look at porting the tests over from the Windows calculator. And for on that topic, which is interesting, we're able to port many parts. Well, we're actually able to port any part of the Windows code that regards to implementing controls, like let's say a list view or text boxes and things like that. When we take controls, import those controls from the WinUI source that Microsoft have been developing and continue developing currently. We import the control itself. But we're also importing the UI test that goes along. So we can validate that the behavior is not changing or being altered from what they've originally designed.
Okay. So I want to talk about UI testing, but this seems yes. like a slippery slope. I got to ask the obvious question. I can hear the listeners screaming out there. Does that mean that our WinForms applications and WPF desktop applications will be able to just be slid into WebAssembly and URL launched?
So no, not WinForms and WPF. So that's what I think. So when we're talking C# and XAML, we're talking about the one that goes along with WinUI compatible. So we're talking UWP.
The universal and UI.
Exactly. So UWP is kind of a weird term because it's kind of a it's complicated. It means multiple things. So when we're talking about UWP, UWP is the container model, which is the one where an application cannot escape and do anything outside of that container. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is providing the APIs that the application have access to in the UWP context, but we're not doing anything with the containerized model aside from what the original system or the hosting system is doing. So let's say you're on iOS. Well, you can't do anything else that an iOS application is able to do. Same thing for a web browser. If you're in a web browser, you can't go right on the file system if the browser has not given access, given you access to do that kind of things. So that means that with regards to applications that needs to be ported over to let's say the web, first you have to make them compatible with either WinUI 2 or WinUI 3, and then at that point, it can run on the web.
Okay. All right. So back to calculator and all these other types of applications, and you're running tests that go in from the user interface on down.
Yep.
How many different types of test frameworks and what are they? Because there's a lot of application developers out there. Yeah, they know Selenium, but if it can't be tested with Selenium, they're kind of scratching their head.
Of course. So
and you guys have blazed that trail.
Yeah, well, we did. And we're actually going farther down that road. So what we have right now, and UNO started off with only iOS and Android. And what we did at the time is use what Microsoft was providing, or actually Xamarin was providing at the time, which is a Xamarin.UI test. So which is it's a framework that allows for testing either on premises, on your device directly on your machine, or in Xamarin Test Cloud, App Center Test Cloud, it's called now. So it's basically their devices running in their cloud. So they deploy and do thing in there with a very wide range of devices. So that's what we did originally. Then WebAssembly came in and we said, well, we have all those tests that are testing already UNO using that Xamarin UI test framework. So what do we do? What we did is basically add a layer on top of Xamarin UI test that mirrors the API of Xamarin UI test, but also adds support for testing for WebAssembly. And mm-hmm. the vertical that tests for WebAssembly is actually using Selenium underneath. So for a UI test developer, is basically using an API that looks like Xamarin UI test, but depending mm-hmm. on the targets, it's either using actually Xamarin UI test or using Selenium underneath. But it's not using the developers does not have to know about Selenium. It's using the Xamarin UI mm-hmm. test API. Now, the problem with that approach is that Xamarin developed their API set using mobile-specific, more mobile-friendly development. So clicking or right-clicking is not something that the API knows about.
Yeah.
So what we're going to be doing is continue to support that API, but also add the support for something that's called the WinApp driver, which is a framework that allows for testing applications that way. The problem with that specific one is it doesn't have all the, doesn't have all the features that Xamarin UI Test has, and specifically a way to execute code inside of the target application. So that's why we're not there yet. And we're probably going to be discussing that with Microsoft this year about adding that kind of support feature to be able to go and poke inside the application to do things that either to make it go faster or to do things that the UI cannot do, but helps the UI test itself, that kind of thing. So that's the route that we're taking at this point. And of course, we're taking a look at being able to test UI test iOS, Mac OS and Linux. And for now, we have nothing for now. So that's something that we're looking at.
Okay. So is the current state of the art still Selenium?
For web, yes. For mobile, it can be Appium for some. We chose to do Xamarin UI Test because of the backdooring system, the fact that mm-hmm. you can run code inside, and Appium doesn't do that at this point. You can't execute code inside of the application, and that's quite a big problem. So that's why we're sticking with Xamarin UI Test and parts of Selenium, because we can execute JavaScript inside of an application. We can't do that inside of a Windows app, for instance.
Right. Okay. Now, so Xamarin UI Test, does that cover Android and iOS?
Android and iOS. Yeah.
Okay. Only. Those. Gotcha. And WebAssembly. Have you found a UI test framework?
So that's Selenium. So that's where you're using Selenium. So it's underneath. So we have Xamarin. So we have for our users for the Uno platform, we provide what is called the Uno UI test, which uses Xamarin UI test for iOS and Android and Selenium for WebAssembly. So we're basically
it's facading, a different edition.
We're facading the whole.
Okay.
The
whole normal thing. The workflow is you bring up in the browser, you press the F12 developer tools, you inspect the element, and you find how to get an identifier for it.
Yep.
But if it's WebAssembly, that doesn't work, right?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. But the thing is that when we're looking at cross-platform UI testing, you can't rely on just go and inspect the DOM, because there's no DOM on the other platforms. So you have to go through.
Right.
You have to go through an abstraction that says, well, if you're looking at that element, then on iOS, it's going to go get on that UI tree stuff. If it goes to Skia, then it's something completely different. And if it goes to WebAssembly, then it has to go to the DOM. So there's multiple ways to get to elements. So that's why we're facading Selenium in front of something else, because we want cross-platform UI testing.
And now, is that a framework that if people are interested in this, they need to be using the Uno platform test framework?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. For Uno platform, so we've developed our own platform, our own testing framework that mimics what Xamarin UI Test is able to do in terms of API set. But it works specifically for Uno platform applications, because there are specific extensions like, go get that specific element with that specific name and do a specific set of operation on that element. And, go get a screenshot, or give me the screen size or things like that need to go in and poke inside the application, because the API set of either Selenium or the other is not able to give, because it was not implemented that way. So that's how we're doing it.
Okay. All right. So we're kind of at the end of the show, but with your perspective on this, fast forward us down the road, some significant number of years, so that developers can get some guidance. If they're developing new applications now, what technologies and frameworks should they just kind of let be part of history? And which one should they be latching onto as a good solid investment that, in your opinion, has the longest potential track record from this point forward?
It's a very difficult question, because, depending on what you're targeting and your audience. If you're, let's say, in government, you may want to target Windows, because that's the one that's going to stay for the longest. But if you're on the web, it's probably going to be something that's JavaScript framework, but the JavaScript framework are not going to stay for that long because, you know, it goes very fast. If you're on Linux, there's going to be something else. So that's what we want to, you know, with the Uno platform, we want to let's say give the longest longevity, and we're not inventing anything. And that's the biggest point for cross-platform dev, for our point of view, is that we're relying on what Microsoft is providing as the API set. That API is the API that Windows is using for itself. So it's not going away in any way. It's a difficult question for targeting, for knowing and going for the specific horse. It's just, what platform do you want to target? Is the platform you want to target, do you agree with the limitations, or is it something that, do you want to have access to accessibility? Do you want to have full fidelity with all the pixels? Do you want to be able to use the language that you want? Do you want to stick to JavaScript? Do you want to have, that's the kind of questions that need to be answered before. We chose to go the route of XAML and C# because that's what we originally did when developing applications for Windows. And people have been asking us for going to iOS, Android, and others. And the fact that we're not inventing anything and just sitting on the shoulder of giants and using the tools that are available, or in, you know, adding some tools open source for what we're able to do and provide to the community is, I think, the safest way to go in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something as big as Microsoft behind it to go forward.
Gotcha. Awesome. Well, you certainly have a big job and lots of exciting yes. things happening with the Uno platform. So
yes, definitely.
Well, thanks for sharing that the DevOps success story and all the thought that y'all put into creating a complete DevOps environment for a platform that targets so many computing yes. environments.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to work with, to say the least. So people can visit us at platform.uno. And take a look.
Awesome. And if people want to get in touch with you, what would be the best route?
So we have our Discord, platform.uno. We have reachable on Twitter at @JLABAM. And Discord is easy, or Twitter. It both works.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.